Six Music.
BBC Radio, Six Music Documentaries.
Welcome to The First Time on Six Music with me, Matt Everett. This is the series where we meet some of the most influential and best-loved musicians around and look at the seminal first musical moments that shaped their lives and their careers. This week's guest, well, he's a proper rock star, and he's so recognisable and so famous that sometimes it's easy to forget the musician behind the celebrity, the incredible performances that lie beyond the tabloid image. This is a man who's got, without doubt, one of the greatest and most soulful voices ever to have emerged from these shores. My guest's greatest songs are a combination of his early musical passions. His life was changed by witnessing the early years of rock and roll. His obsessions grew to encompass folk, soul, R&B and the emerging London blues scene in the 60s that gave him his first job as a singer, where that voice was heard for the first time. That voice, that soulful, bluesy, raucous voice, has guided the Jeff Beck Group, the Faces, and launched a solo career as an international megastar that continues to this day. Forget the haircuts, forget the model girlfriends, forget the odd artistic misstep, forget all the cliches, and remember the voice that came first. My guest here on The First Time this week is Mr. Rod Stewart. When were you first aware of music as a kid? Can you remember?
Yeah, my family were big Al Jolson fans, and they used to play Al Jolson the music, and this is going to make me sound really old, but one of those things you have to wind up with a trumpet.
Yeah.
I must have only been one or two, I don't know. And then they took me to, when I was about six or seven, to see the Jolson films, Jolson Sings Again, so Al Jolson.
Was it an instant fat? Is it exciting? I want to do that.
Not necessarily. It was in my subconscious. And I still appreciate Al Jolson for what he did in the music business and as a singer. I mean, he would get up and sing before 3,000 people without a microphone, which is quite incredible.
After you've gone and left me crying, after you've gone, there's no denying, you'll feel blue. You'll feel sad. You'll miss the bestest pal you've ever had. There'll come a time, now don't forget it. There'll come a time when you'll regret it. Someday, when you grow lonely.
He was the initial person that flooded through my brain as a kid.
What about the first record that you owned that was yours? Because that's such a special thing.
That is so... Yeah, I actually bought... It was Chuck Berry Live at Tivoli Gardens.
Good record.
It was a live album. I remember, you know, there was... You're absolutely right. There's something about vinyl. It's precious, isn't it? It's like an extension of your body almost. So that was my first album I bought.
Proper rock and roll straight away.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybelline, why can't you be true? Can't you be true? You done started doing the things you used to do. As I was motivating over the hill, I saw Maybelline in a coupe de ville. A Cadillac rolling on an open road, nothing out to run my V8-4. A Cadillac doing about 95, moves bumper to bumper, rolling side to side. Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You done started back doing the things you used to do. Can't you be true? You done started back doing the thing you used to do.
In terms of your first live music experience, because you have your first records, an important thing, but also seeing a band, seeing a rock and roll band live for the first time, what was your first experience?
And I can remember that.
Go on.
I have to go back before the first album now.
Okay.
I was probably about 11 or 12. And my big brother, Don, he took me to see Bill Haley and the Comets at the Estate Kilburn.
Well, Saturday night and I just got paid. All about my money, don't try to save. My heart says go, go, have a time. Cause it's Saturday night and baby, I feel fine. I'm gonna rock it up. I'm gonna rip it up. I'm gonna shake it up. I'm gonna break it up. I'm gonna lock it up at the ball tonight.
And I remember being up in what they used to call the gods in those days, the balcony, and it was literally bouncing up and down. He only played for 20 minutes. He played Rock Around the Clock, Rip It Up, Shake, Rattle and Roll, and a couple of everybody, See You Later, Alligator. Everybody was going mad. It was the first time I'd ever seen Teddy Boys, you know.
Yeah, because everyone said it was almost like a punk thing, seats being ripped up,
yeah,
going insane. Was it like that?
Yeah, it was. It was scary for me. I'd never seen anything like it. So nothing's new, is it?
Yeah.
Nothing's new.
Care if I spend my dough, cause tonight I'm gonna be one happy soul. I'm gonna rock it up, I'm gonna rip it up, I'm gonna shake it up, I'm gonna break it up, I'm gonna lock it up at the ball tonight.
You saw Otis Redding as well, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
Was he the first kind of soul singer that you fell in love with?
I think probably it was Sam Cooke, you know, when I first got my job. And we used to have these little transistor radios, and I heard, I think it was Cupid, Draw Back Your Bow coming down, you know, and that just influenced me straight away. But the first live show I saw of any soul music was Otis. He had some presence on the stage because he was a big man.
Yeah.
Booker T was on the stage, Martha and the Vandellas, Sam and Dave, and one other. And they all came on, they did 20 minutes. But there was a lot of competition between Sam and Dave and Otis Redding because Sam and Dave were going down a storm,
yeah,
and Otis didn't like it.
Was that the point that you started to think, that's what I want to do, when you saw them live? Did that come into your mind at that point?
No, because I'd already been bought a guitar years before that my dad bought me for no apparent reason. And I'd also been going down to Brighton Beach. I was a beatnik. That's where, yep, the song Brighton Beach comes from. So I'd started playing guitar and people were listening to me. So I thought, well, I must have something. Didn't pursue it any further for quite a while.
I want to ask you as well about the blues scene in London in the early 60s, seemed really genuinely exciting. There seemed to be such a vibrant mix of talent and people, people like Long John Baldry, who you sang with. Can you remember first kind of meeting that crowd?
Yeah, because, you know, we have to pay homage to Cyril Davis and Chris Barber and Alexis Corner, because if it wasn't for those guys, we may never have discovered Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf and Jimmy Reed and all those, because they brought the Chicago blues to England, really, bless them. It was electrifying, it really was. You know, the Marquee Club and the Ken Collier Jazz Club, which became an R&B club, and it really was a small amount of people. And it was just in London, Manchester and Stoke, I think, where all the good clubs were. So it was a pretty small group of people.
But all these people went on to have this enormous effect and careers.
Yeah.
It must have been quite exciting to be... Did it feel like you were part of a sort of burgeoning British movement?
Very much so. And I'll tell you a story. When I was with Long John's band, and he had an album cover that was Muddy Waters live in Newport, and I asked if I could borrow it and take it home. And he said, no, he said, Mick and Keith have got it at the moment. And he said, I only kept the album cover to make sure that they brought it back. He said, but when it does come back, I think the Yardbirds want it. And I said, well, after the Yardbirds, can I have it? You know, that's how tight-knit it was. It was amazing.
I love that idea of just this one hallowed object passed around everybody.
And he wouldn't let them have the album cover in case he didn't get it back.
Up above my head.
Up above my head.
I hear music in the air.
I hear music in the air.
Up above my head.
Up above my head.
I hear
music in the air.
Up above my head.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I hear music in the air. I really do believe it. I really do believe there's a heaven somewhere.
Up above my head.
Up above my head.
I see trouble in the air.
I see trouble in the air.
Up above my head.
Up above my head.
Performing with Jeff Beck for the first time, was it a case of seeing him play and just thinking he's a bit good?
You know, Ronnie and I were both out of work. I'd been fired from the Hoochie Coochie Man, John's band. I don't know if I remember if I was fired, but I wasn't in a band. And Ronnie was with the group called The Birds, so he was out of work. And we all met down at Cromwellian Club, which is well before your time, in the Cromwell Road. And Jeff said, do you want to join my band? And we said, yeah, we're all out of work, you know. I can't remember the first show, though. Can't remember the first gig. Remember the first gig we did in New York at Fillmore East. We were on the bill with Grateful Dead. I don't know if you know about this. This is the time I was so nervous I didn't come out. I sang behind the amps and I didn't come out. And we absolutely wiped the floor with Grateful Dead. They couldn't follow us on. I remember that show. Brilliant that was.
I'm drinking again, thinking of when you left me.
Now that was so once so long ago.
First solo album, 1969, An Old Raincoat Won't Ever Let You Down. It's quite a folky record.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Man of Constant Sorrow and Dirty Old Town on there.
I fell in love with folk music because my dad had already bought me a guitar and I didn't know what to do with it. It was a little pre-rock and roll, the skiffle era, you know, Lonnie Donegan. So then I discovered Lonnie Donegan, then through him discovered some of the great folk artists, and with the help of Bob Dylan's first album, and he sung about Woody Guthrie. So then I go, like it is now, kids do it now, they discover. I go and get Woody Guthrie albums, and I go and get Ramblin' Jack albums, and then I felt I had a place. I had a guitar, and these are the songs I'm going to sing, Cocaine Blues, San Francisco Bay Blues. So I was in love with folk music before I was in love with soul music.
Mm. There is that bringing together rock and roll and folk and soul, though, on a lot of your early stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, on that first album especially, yeah.
Every Picture Tells a Story, 71, that was your first number one album. Was that record as much fun to make as it sounds when you listen to it?
Oh, yeah, it certainly was. It was... Casual isn't a strong enough word to use. When you have a drummer, Mickey Waller, bless him, he's no longer with us, turns up to play on Maggie May without a full drum kit. He said, I couldn't get my drum kit in my Mini because I had to bring the dog. I had no one to look after it. So everybody had to go around looking for to put his drum kit together. And if you listen, when we did Maggie May, there was no cymbals on it at all. He dubbed the cymbals on afterwards.
Seriously?
Yeah. We didn't have any high expectations. Once you become successful, you start thinking, oh, Jesus, got to top that one. Got to do something even better. But then it was just throw it together and it worked.
Because it does. It sounds like a band not necessarily always in time or, but it comes together, these glorious personalities, and it sounds just...
Yeah.
like a band getting real pleasure from playing.
Yeah, that would be the word. It was pleasurable. And a few bottles of Matthieu's Rosé.
Wake up, Maggie,
guest here on The First Time This Week is Mr. Rod Stewart. Of course we were going to play it. There was no way we weren't going to play it. That was Maggie May by Rod Stewart from his first number one album, Every Picture Tells a Story. And this is The First Time with me, Matt Everett. Thank you.
possess. Well, I never complain because my father said, son, you get your chance before you're my age. Then he took me upstairs and gave me a suit, grinning all over his face. He said others may come and the others may go, but that suit will be around way at the Arcona. Tree button, hand me down. Tree button. Between me and my suit, there was a Philly from Boston who brought me from Houston. I forget no one in Detroit. They said, we like you, boy, and we think you're sweet, but can't you lose your suit? I said, no, 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 you can't do that to me. I remember what my father said. He said, others may come and but that suit'll be around way at the old goal. Tree button, hand me down. Tree button, hand me down. Yo.
That is Three Button Hand Me Down by The Faces from their first album, First Steps. Also got to ask you about The Faces. Mm-hmm. I mean, can you remember their first gigs? Because once again, if we're talking about a band who just has that chemistry and enjoys each other's company musically, was it like that?
It was. It was a love affair between all of us. And I hope they agree, so I'm going to look really silly. But I do remember the first show, we went up and played an Air Force base for the American Airmen. And it was one of those massive aeroplane hangars.
Yeah.
And the audience just sat around the outside not knowing what to do. So we just played and no one came on the dance floor. And
what, to an empty square?
Empty square after about an hour. We just all packed up. I think that may have been when the drinking started. You know, we're going to have to do this every night. We better get drunk.
See, that's interesting that the big bands in big stadiums and arenas, people are used to that machine being behind you. But I guess you were kind of out doing this before the organisation was in place.
Yeah, it was this aeroplane hangar. Imagine how big it is. It was used to having a big old airplane in there. But we enjoyed each other's company, so it didn't seem such a hardship that the Americans weren't responding.
Mm.
They certainly did a little bit down the line, you know, a couple of years later when we broke in America.
If we're talking about the Faces, we're talking about your career, we have to talk about Stay With Me, which has become one of those songs that's kind of woven into the fabric of rock and roll. What is it that you think people love about that song so much?
I don't know. It's an honest piece of rock and roll. But I will tell you this. When a couple of years ago when I played the Hard Rock in Hyde Park, you know, I play Stay With Me, but I haven't got Woody. But once he walked on and started playing, no one can play it like him.
Yeah.
It's spot on, you know. I do hope we have a Faces reunion pretty soon. I'm all up for it.
Yeah, you want to do it?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah! In terms of those performances, they sound so great. They sound so full of life, you know. I mean, not over-rehearsed, not overplayed, just played with passion. Stay With Me has got that feel to it. Was it like a... Now, it wasn't a first take, but it wasn't something you recorded loads of times, was it?
No, it was worked out, like most of the Faces stuff, and a lot of my solo career stuff was worked out in the pub. You know, we go in there and go, what about this riff? Do-do-da-do-da. Yeah, that's good. Let's go back in the studio. You play and I'll sing it. You know, and that's a lot of the stuff was born in the pub. No pubs left now, so...
In your autobiography, you mentioned Freddie Mercury a lot, and you speak about him really, really fondly. What was he like as a guy? Did you get on well with him?
Very well. He was a gentleman, and I've got so many stories. The one I love is about when me, Elton, and Freddie were together, and we were going to form a band called Nose, Teeth and Hair. And we were quite serious, I think. You know. Now, Freddie was a dear man. I didn't know him extremely well. I wouldn't call him... as one of my close friends ever, but on a good acquaintance.
I'm just trying to imagine what a night out with you, Freddie and Elton John would be like.
Oh, my God. Only the strong survive.
I am sailing home again across the sea. I am sailing stormy waters to be near you, to be free.
In 1975, Atlantic Crossing, the album, made you a really, really big international star. And you were big before, but this was a different level of fame. How do you think you cope with that? Because there's no rehearsals, there's no practice you can have for being at the centre of that much attention.
No, I'd sort of got used to it a little bit with every picture story. Mm. Every picture tells a story, but in the interim, I'd fallen in love with a very famous Hollywood film star, Swedish actress called Britt Ekland, so that really did put us both in the spotlight. I think that's what changed, and I think that's what really annoyed a lot of music critics. Two things. A, I was going to go and live in America because the taxes were so ridiculous in this country, and B, I was going out with a Hollywood film star, so the critics hated it. It was, oh, Rod's gone to Hollywood, he's gone all Hollywood, you know. So it wasn't the greatest period of my life, reflection.
It must be difficult living under that much scrutiny. Every you can't just go out for a quick drink or just pop and see your mates without it being photographed.
Yeah, you can. Strange. Yeah, I mean, in my heyday, let's say, you know, the paparazzi weren't as intrusive, there were no... You know, camera phones. There was no the internet didn't exist. So you had a certain amount of freedom. Thank goodness, because the things I used to get up to. God, Lord have mercy.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, because you've been quite frank about your indulgences, but a lot of musicians kind of lost their way in the 80s quite a bit. There's a lot of drugs, a lot of booze, a lot of people kind of got fractured and went rehab. You kind of emerged pretty unscathed, didn't you?
Yeah. Thank goodness. And as I say in my book, I've never really been a druggie. I've never bought any drugs. You know, I say that in the book quite frankly, but it was always a social thing with me. It never interfered with my marriages or my friendship or my music or my children. You know, but and I've always played football. So you know, Saturday night there's a game. Sunday morning you won't catch me out. You know, so I always think football's been somewhat of a saviour for me.
So genuinely, it helped keep you
fit.
Where others fell by the wayside, football was your saviour.
And I'm still playing at the age of 68 in a over 50s league. That is an addiction, football, I tell you.
When you've got a song like Sailing, what's your relationship like with that track? Because some people are like, oh, okay, you've got to wheel it out. And you know, some nights I'd rather not do it. Other people are like, hey, look, this is one of the songs that helped make me who I am. How do you feel about that track now? Because it's another one that's become ubiquitous, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm of the second school of thought. I like to give the audience what they want. And quite honestly, I don't get tired of singing any songs. There was a period in the early 80s where I was getting tired of Do You Think I'm Sexy? But even that now is like a national anthem, you know, all around the world. People just love it and they sing it and I do it. And if they love it, I love it. You know, we're there to entertain. That's all we're there for, you know. And I want to entertain. I want to give the audience what they pay for.
Downtown Train by Tom Waits was kind of not re-established you. I was trying to sort of work out, because it's not like you're on your ass sales-wise, but it kind of opened you up to a whole new audience again. Had you always loved Tom Waits, or did that one song kind of speak to you in some way?
I was aware of Tom. That was, I think, 1989 or 88, 1990. I was aware of Tom, but that did. It sort of I may have even brought my rock and roll audience back a wee bit, but I've loved the guy's work ever since. You know, I've got a track on this album. Apparently he said, I'm so glad Rod has done one of my tracks again, I could put a roof on the house. a new roof on the house. And I think he said Downtown Train paid for a swimming pool at his house. So bless him.
Another yellow moon has punched a hole in the nighttime, yes. I climb to the window and down to the street. I'm shining like a new dime. The downtown trains are full for all those Brooklyn girls. They try so hard to break out of their little worlds. Now you wave your hand. The scattered echoes. They have nothing that will ever capture your heart. They're just thorns without the rose. Be careful of them in the dark. Oh, if I was the one you chose to be your only one. Oh yeah, can't you hear me now? Can't you hear me now? I see you.
See you tonight.
So with this new record, it's your first album of new material in almost 20 years. Was there a moment when you were like, okay, I've finished paying tribute to these various people over the past couple of albums, and now I've got something to say again?
I don't know how it came about. It's the question I get asked, you know. I think when you know, they had a lot to write about. The right demos came along. You know what I mean by demos, you know, guys will make up just a few chords. That was good. That came at the right time. So, but it was an outpouring. There's a word for it when you have this creative output, and I can't think of the word. I've been trying to think of it for days. When everything comes together, it's like a eureka moment, and there's a good word for it, but I can't think of it. And it was one of those 8 months where I wrote all those tracks, and it was just easy. It may never happen again.
What's the best thing about being Rod Stewart?
Oh, so many things. I enjoy my fame. I really do. You will never find me complaining. But the best thing about being Rod Stewart, I have a seat for life at Celtic Park, and so do my two sons.
And the final thing, we ask all our guests on this show to pick the last song. So it can be anything you wish, anything from your past or by someone else, for a new album, an old album. It's the song which we'll finish the show on, so it's your
I think I should finish. This is a song, this is from the new album, mm-hmm. And this is a song I wrote about my kids. So, and it's called Pure Love.
Thank you very much, it's been good to speak to you.
Great.
If that old friend lets you down, and a true love can't be found, till the blue skies come around, I'll be right by your side. Journey far and travel safe, make this world a better place, and keep that smile upon your face. I'll be right by your side. There may be oceans in between us now, but I think about you every living hour. No, don't forget me now that we're apart. Just open up that great big loving heart, and you'll always be, you'll always be, you'll always be a part of me. Take your time to embrace romance. Teach your children how to sing and dance. Love may hurt, but it's worth the chance. I'll be right by your side. Try to be the best you can. Show compassion to every man, and always take the higher ground. I'll be right by your side. I hear your laughter echo through this house. I miss all of this, there is no doubt. This I will admit, I was always trying to make the pieces fit. And you'll always be, you'll always be, yes, always be a part of me. you were born. So many times we have laughed and cried. I see you now and it fills my heart with pride. You will always be, yes, always be. You'll always be a part of me.
It's BBC Radio.
Six Music.
Six Music.
Six Music.
You're about to hear a shortened version of the Morning After Mix, a carefully curated playlist available in the BBC Sounds app. It's full of gentle songs for when you need a musical rescue or escape. To find the full version, just search Morning After in the app. But for now, enjoy the calm.